Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, here with my boy Ray Jeezy. Will T's out, but he'll be back next week, hopefully. We have a lot to talk about in sports. It's Super Bowl week.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And it's your week for real. Real talk is your week.
As an Atlanta fan, I'm excited. Eugene Robinson, what's happening? You remember what happened?
Oh, I do. That like Super Bowl weekend when he had that situation.
Prostitute.
Yeah, oh, I remember, dude. I remember. I mean, that's when the Dirty Bird was popping. You know what I mean? Y'all just eliminated. I mean, you all, because you are Atlanta Falcons fan. You eliminated the Minnesota Vikings with Randy Moss. That's the team I actually thought should have won the Super Bowl that year.
Well, see, I have a problem with that team because the Vikings was supposed to be a team of destiny. to go to the Super Bowl and get slaughtered is annoying.
Oh, yeah.
As a fan, I was totally excited. I wore a Tim Dwight jersey to school the day after the game.
I'm sure you
It was great.
You should be excited. You're, like I said, you are an Atlanta Falcons fan. That is a rare thing in the DMV.
That's not as rare as you think. When I went to see the Falcons and the Redskins play, it was a lot of Atlanta jerseys there. But not as nearly as you'll see for teams such as Philly.
The Cowboys.
Green Bay is another one. They travel well. Yeah. Pittsburgh. It's not one of those fan bases. But I'm planning a trip as we speak to go to the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium next season. So hopefully I can be there when they raise the banner, if they do that.
Also, it's Black History Month.
It is Black History
Month. Yes. You know, the first day.
So I feel like half of my heritage is being celebrated. The other half, I'm with the rest of the world. It's great.
Mom, anyway, let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Like I mentioned before, we're going to do our Super Bowl preview of the Atlanta Falcons versus the New England Patriots. It's Super Bowl 51 at 8:20. We're going to pose a question. Could you see the Washington Wizards become the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference at 8:30. Another question is going to be, would you like to trade a first-round pick a top five pick for Washington Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins? At 8:40, we'll discuss Serena Williams winning the Australia Open and winning her 23rd Grand Slam. We'll have CC Towns from GladiateHers.com to discuss that. Finally, we'll talk about the beef between LeBron James and Charles Barkley. But first, it's the Super Bowl. That's self-explanatory. So we have the Super Bowl here. The big matchup is Tom Brady versus Matt Ryan. The franchise elite quarterback, the guy who can go down as the greatest quarterback to ever play this game against, to me, Matt Ryan, who's now become elite because he took his team to the Super Bowl.
I don't know if that puts him at elite status. As a fan, I think he has to win this game in order to be considered elite. It reminds me of Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. When they got their one Super Bowl, they were automatically pushed into that upper echelon of quarterbacks. I think Matt Ryan needs this win, and it's against Brady, which is great. Drew Brees beat Peyton Manning. Uh-huh. Aaron Rodgers, he beat Roethlisberger. Does the matchup head-to-head matter in the Super Bowl? I don't know. But the fact that it's Brady, I think, makes it that much more significant.
So place your bet. It's Brady, Matt Ryan, this season. Let's not go off of what happened last season or, you know, in their past. Which quarterback are you taking?
And
don't be a fan. Just be real.
In this game? Or just in general?
In this game. Let's go. Let's say in this game. Which quarterback are you taking?
I'm going with Matt Ryan, period.
And why? Because you're a fan?
No. You can look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. Matt Ryan, more passing yards. Well, Tom Brady missed 4 games, though. So is that fair?
Matt Ryan has almost 5,000 passing yards. I mean, you got 4,944. His quarterback rating's higher than Tom Brady. We can go off of that, right? In 4 games, Tom Brady's about 112, and Matt Ryan is 117 at quarterback rating. So if you want to like subtract the 4 games and say, you know what, off of the quarterback rating itself, Matt Ryan has been the better quarterback.
He has Julio Jones. That's an advantage. Uh-huh. He also has an excellent running game, which I feel like is an advantage as well. Two excellent running backs. Tom Brady, he works with guys who on other teams probably wouldn't be starters and does well. So I'm actually making an argument for Brady right now. I am picking Matt Ryan as a fan. It's official. Now that I'm talking.
Well, I'll say this. I'm picking Matt Ryan this season because, one, again, I mentioned the quarterback rating. Matt Ryan's quarterback rating is 117.1. Tom Brady is 112.2. I like Matt Ryan.
38 touchdowns is impressive.
Average yard per pass. Matt Ryan's about 9.3. Tom Brady's about 8.2. So to me, Matt Ryan is, you know, going for more explosive plays. Now, granted, he has Julio Jones, but you know, we can say that Tom Brady for most of this season. Till you know the latter half, he had Gronkowski, who to me is a big play tight end. So he did have a big play threat. Now, yes, Ray mentioned the wide receiver situation. He has Edelman, who I believe had 1,100 yards this season. But then we had Julio Jones, who came in second in the league in receiving yards to T.Y. Hilton. And Julio Jones, I think we all agree, is the best wide receiver in football right now. But you don't take that away from Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan has spread the ball around tremendously. You saw Sanu, the secondary wide receiver for this team, has flourished. Then you have the young kid, the slot receiver. I'm missing his name. Is it Gabriel?
Taylor Gabriel,
yeah. Yeah, Gabriel, who to me has been explosive down the stretch. Matt Ryan has shared the ball. I think he just been on top of his game.
Well, if you stack up the offenses next to each other, you got the second-ranked offense in Atlanta, you got the fourth-ranked offense in New England. Atlanta, total yards, they outpassed New England 4,725 yards to 4,308 yards, 38 touchdowns. For Atlanta, all by Matt Ryan, 32 touchdowns, passing touchdowns for New England. Granted, they started a few different quarterbacks in the beginning of the year. Rushing is about even. Uh-huh. Atlanta, 1,928 yards, 20 TDs. New England, 1,800 yards, 1,872 yards, 19. That stacks up buzzy. LeGarrette Blount versus Devontae Freeman. LeGarrette Blount has more rushing yards and 7 more rushing touchdowns, but he gets a lot of carries around the goal line.
You got a dual threat, too. You got a dual threat in Atlanta. You got to add both of those running backs combined.
Tevin?
Yeah.
Tevin
Coleman. To me, it's not even – I'd take Atlanta's running game over the Patriots' running game. But back to it, and you listen to Urban Sports Team, myself, Wally, my boy Ray Jeezy. I just think that if we're going off of this season, Matt Ryan has been the better quarterback. So when you go off of this season and you go to this one particular game, you want to choose Matt Ryan. Even you can even say in the grand scheme of things, in the postseason, Matt Ryan has been more consistent than Tom Brady. Tom Brady struggled against the Houston Texans. And Matt Ryan has played well throughout both games he's been in with Seattle and the Green Bay Packers.
The Seattle game was significant for me because, to me, that's a legitimate defense. To throw for 338 yards and 3 touchdowns against that defense is, I think, just proving that he is moving to that elite status. Now, Green Bay, he threw for 392 yards, but that defense was horrible. It was banged up.
Agreed. But you could say Seattle isn't the same the defense without an Earl Thomas. I do think they're still a quality defense. I'm not taking anything away from Seattle. I think they're a quality defense, but I think without Earl Thomas, they're not the same defense.
Well, Matt Ryan gets the ball out quick. Mm-hmm. That is what separates elite quarterbacks. You think about the guys that are at the upper echelon level, such as Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers. These same guys we keep mentioning, they get the ball out so fast. And when you have pressure that Seattle brings with Bennett up front, it's a tough defense to play against no matter who they have on the field, and they have good cover corners. But, again, going back to just Matt Ryan in general, this is what he does to every team in the league. He always plays well. When he struggles, typically it's him missing a couple throws, but it's never because of a defense dictating what he does. He's excellent at the line, just like Peyton Manning.
So far, it sounds like Ray and I are both picking Matt Ryan. But
Matt Ryan as a fan, though, because Tom Brady missed 4 games. You think about other quarterbacks coming back from a 4-game absence. I think they might be a bit rusty, but not him.
So who would you, people listening, who would you have quarterback of your team, Tom Brady or Matt Ryan? Call in the numbers 240-478-3140. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Again, the question, and also the question is on our Facebook page. So just make sure you check it out and respond to the tweet. I just think that obviously that's going to flip side to Tom Brady. I too am picking Matt Ryan in this matchup. I think Matt Ryan has been the hotter quarterback and been the more consistent quarterback. Tom Brady, this is a big game, and we know that Tom Brady does play well in these type of games. He's a Super Bowl quarterback. He plays well, even though I think against Seattle, he didn't have the best start to the season, but he had the best finish to it. But could you really truly ever doubt a Tom Brady in this game, knowing that Atlanta, even with an improving Atlanta Falcons defense?
To me, Tom Brady's going to get his numbers. I just feel as though Atlanta's defense is good enough to make the stops when they need it. And I'm not threatened, especially without Gronkowski as a fan at the Atlanta Falcons. I'm not threatened by what New England brings to the table offensively. Julian Edelman is an excellent receiver, but he only had 3 touchdowns this entire year. So that's not somebody I'm scared of. A.J. Green would scare me more than a Julian Edelman. Now, their running game, again, is excellent. But this Falcons defense is emerging. And they're getting better and better, and with young, excellent DBs, Vic Beasley leading the league in sacks, 15.5 sacks this year. I think Tom Brady's going to have his work cut out, although he is Tom Brady. Yeah. He's going to get his numbers. It's just like the Giants did a couple years back. Can you get that stop when you need it?
And that's a good question. You mentioned defenses. The New England Patriots defense is, in terms of total defense within yardage,
number 1, right?
Eight.
They're number 8?
In total yardage, is there 8 in the NFL, which...
Oh, when I thought they were. Oh, as far as total, I'm thinking yards allowed. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. They're 8th in the NFL, which, again, that's very impressive. You would think when you look at this defense, you know, when we're looking at Atlanta, we always look at Atlanta's offense. We're not looking at the Patriots and the Patriots' offense. But now, on the flip side, like you mentioned, defense, Atlanta's defense has improved. But the Patriots' defense has been one of the top defense in the NFL.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Atlanta's defense, as far as points allowed, is ranked 27th. And then, again, the Patriots, as far as points allowed, they're ranked first. But 34 sacks for each team, 23 takeaways by New England, 22 by Atlanta. They're about even.
I wouldn't say they're even. And that, no knock on Atlanta.
Statistically.
No, you're talking about – you're taking away from your yardage, you know, like points. You're talking about points allowed.
Uh-huh.
New England's number one.
That's how you win the game.
Yeah,
you got to score.
New England's number one.
Yeah.
Right?
They are.
And where's Atlanta ranked?
27.
They're not.
Seven.
Like
Atlanta started out the year.
No, I agree.
They've gotten better. Yeah. I told you guys off air several times that this defense, every week I saw them getting better. And I said, okay, this is a team that can compete for a title. Yeah. And they're proving me right.
No, I'm just saying we're comparing defenses. I think the New England defense is better than Atlanta's defense. I'm not knocking Atlanta. I think they're
sure,
better than Atlanta.
Sure. I'm just saying, I feel like from a statistical standpoint, they're close. I know you're going to go with the points thing.
And the yardage thing. I'll go with the yardage thing, too. If you're talking about 8th and Atlanta's I think the
34 sacks each. Yeah. 23 takeaways. Turnovers,
I don't go off turnovers.
It's like you're a Redskins fan, right?
Yeah.
The Redskins will play a bad game defensively,
yeah,
but maybe at the end get a fumble or interception.
Yeah, it's fluke. And I call it fluke, yeah.
No, but that's important, though. And people, meaning media writers, they would say the Redskins made the plays when they needed to, even though they would criticize Joe Barry. But Josh Norman, I remember when he did the arrow thing, that was a big play, that strip.
Yeah.
And it helped win an important football game. Mm-hmm. You weren't worried about the rushing yards they gave up early in the game.
You told me we're comparing defense. You told me to compare the Redskins defense to, say, the New England defense, right? And we're talking about making plays, whatever. I would laugh and say, I would easily say New England defense is better than the Redskins defense.
So are you easily saying that New England's defense is better than Atlanta?
Yeah, I'm easily saying that. And I'm not – it's no knock on Atlanta.
No, it's okay. Even if you are, that's fine.
Look, I think –
this is why they're favorite.
But this is
New England's favorite.
But this is the thing, though. The Atlanta's offense is a high-powered offense. I think against New England, they're going to see an offense they haven't seen before. I mean, New England's going to see an offense they haven't seen before in Atlanta. The best wide receiver in football. A solid running game. You know what I mean? A quarterback who's willing to distribute the ball, not just key in on one person. Now, on the flip side, Atlanta's defense, I think, matches up well against a New England offense because you got Dan Quinn, who coached in Seattle, and you see he runs the type of scheme that, again, will force New England's wide receivers to beat man press coverage and see if they can beat the cornerback. And even though it's going to be a two-deep system, but still, force the New England wide receivers to make plays rather than playing in zone.
This is where I think, kind of going back to your earlier point as far as New England not seeing this type of offense, the Atlanta Falcons defeated Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers to get to the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So you see the kind
of quarterback. And Brock Osweiler and banged up Ben Roethlisberger is who New England saw. I think that's what's going to make the difference. Atlanta is now needing to take down all of the guys who have, as of recent, had the most success in the league from a quarterback standpoint. And Russell Wilson, a la Tom Brady, while you may not necessarily compare their style of play, Russell Wilson's a winner.
They're clutch.
And he, there you go. Perfect. You say the words for me. I appreciate it.
They're clutching. No, I agree. I mean,
I am impartial right now.
No, I know what you're saying. In terms of being battle tested.
Or bias.
In terms of being battle tested at the quarterback, I mean, in terms of the defense by a quarterback, Atlanta's defense has been through it.
Here's the difference, though. Green Bay, Seattle, they couldn't run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
This New England team can run the football.
If they want to, yes, they can run the football.
They can run the football. They're capable.
They're capable. I like that term.
Very capable. I mean, LeGarrette Blount putting up those numbers? Come on.
Yeah.
So Atlanta's going to prepare for that, but Atlanta's so well coached. Mm-hmm. This is the chance for Dan Quinn, I think, to also put his name up there at the top of the league with the Andy Reids, the Pete Carrolls, maybe not Belichick. Belichick's in a class of his own right now.
Mm-hmm. So what would you, as an Atlanta fan, what would you be looking for in this game?
I'm looking for Atlanta to control the time of possession. That's key. Finding that balance. If you look at Matt Ryan's numbers, Matt Ryan has been highly efficient to close the season and the playoffs, and has kept other teams off the field. If you can convert on third down, that's going to be key. And Atlanta's been one of the best teams at doing it. If you keep Tom Brady off the field, you won't have to worry as much about him.
What I'm looking for is Matt Ryan seeing how focused and how accurate he is early. This is his first Super Bowl. Usually when you watch the Super Bowls over
Matty
the years,
Ice.
Over the years you have guys who kind of look kind of, you know, the moment's getting big for him. Not to say that they end up struggling throughout the whole game, but you know that first quarter they tend to struggle. The first
Peyton
couple
Manning
drives.
Against the Bears got off to a slow start, even though Hester returned a kickoff on the opening play, but he was a little shaky in the get go as well.
So usually I want to see how Matt Ryan starts the game. If he starts the game focused and accurate, like we've seen him in the NFC Championship game or the NFC divisional round, then I just think it'll be a long day for New England Patriots.
He's going to play well. This is Kurt Warner. This is the greatest show on turf type of offense. Yeah, it's that type of offense. It really is. I'm serious. Where they are impossible to stop.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see how Atlanta's defense plays.
I said fun on turf, greatest show on turf.
I know.
Did I get it right?
I think you did. I want to see
who was fun and gun. That's Danny Werfel.
No, fun and gun. That's
the
Redskins.
Yeah, that's the Redskins.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's not who I want to compare the fun to right now. Man, as a fan too, can I just say this?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Chuck, if you're listening, because I'm getting off the topic. But as a Atlanta fan, to be able to win arguments now against other football fans, this would be great. That's really what I'm worried about. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you argue with another fan, do you have any rings? That's the argument. Sorry. I just had to say
I have no idea.
I had to say
what
were you saying?
I'm trying to think. What was I referring to?
I threw you off when I said Kurt Warner. I know that much because you don't like Kurt Warner.
Before that.
The keys to the game. I said time possession, keeping them off the field.
And I guess, I know now. I remember. Thanks, Ray. I appreciate it. I want to see how.
Ryan's
like,
up?
I want to see how Atlanta's defense stops the passing game of the New England
They're
Patriots.
They're not going to stop them. They're not going
to
stop them.
I want to see how. I want to see what Bill Belichick's going to do with Julio Jones. He's going to double Julio. He's probably going to double Julio Jones with lesser quarterback, and put a safety over top, and then Butler check Sanu. So 1-on-1 tight coverage. Malcolm Butler.
A matchup I think that honestly New England probably likes at this point, but. Sanu's played well this year.
Sure has.
I think they're going to make a mistake if they cover him 1-on-1. But this is where Kyle Shanahan has been so great in moving guys around and you know, drawing up plays to get guys open.
So give me a prediction and score.
I am taking Atlanta in this game. I'm going to say 37-34. It's going to be a high-scoring game.
I'm going to take Atlanta in this game. I'm going to go 31-24. It's going to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be that last drive, one way or the other.
I'm so excited. I'm trying to contain myself.
Obviously.
I really am.
Obviously.
I have to because I'm on microphone. I wish I could just, like, scream right now. I was at work, actually, when they won the NFC Championship game, and it was crazy because a lot of Baltimore fans – I work in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
A lot of Baltimore fans do not like Matt Ryan because of the Flacco-Ryan comparison, the run of times they got drafted. And everybody was rooting for Green Bay except for me. And the funny thing is, even when I knew the game was out of reach, I kind of like played it cool. I'm like, you know, remember Frank Wright came back against Houston? The game's not over because Atlanta has blown some big leads. Inside, I was like,
Well, hopefully Atlanta
don't cut me off, jerk.
Well, hopefully
this is Atlanta Falcons show, daggone. This is what you wanted. This is what you've been telling me.
Look, hopefully Atlanta
makes build your Atlanta following.
And makes come you on, proud. Man. Anyway, it's about time to go to another segment. Could the Wizards be the second seed in the Eastern Conference? We'll talk about that after the break. It's the Urban Sports thing for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Go Bullets! Go Bullets! Bounce, bounce, shake, 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 shoot, shoot, break, break, jump, jump, slam, slam. That's the reason I'm a Bullets man.
My man Chris Webber.
You the man, you the man.
Kevin Cheney.
You the man, you the man.
Got to go.
You the man, you the man. That's the reason I'm a Bullets fan.
John McClain.
You the man, you the man.
Dwight Howard.
A little D up, the U.S. Air Arena is the place that's gonna heat up. Step up, get swept up, you know you get devoured by Cheney, Skiles, and Juwan Howard.
What's going on? The Bullets, make no mistake. We're playing up three and getting out on the break. We're all about the defense, the dunks, and the slam, and man, that's the reason I'm a Bullets fan.
Time for slam dunking, mad body thumping, the three in your face there to keep your heart pumping. Playing tough D, coming down with the bound, the Washington Bullets are in your town.
Shots that are sent. Check it, Washington's in the house. Represent, represent.
Butler gets it into Rex Chapman. Rex unloads.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Wally Ray in the building. Will T. Zao, a.k.a. Bradley Bill. He's always injured, sick. Something's always wrong with him. But we love him. Also, look for us tomorrow at Verizon Center. We'll be watching the Wizards game. We'll be covering the Wizards and Lakers live. And we will be doing a post-game show. So you want to stick around for that. If you're a real Urban Sports Scene fan, do that. Follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene. No S after sports. Also, like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Just search Urban Sports Scene. So we're talking Washington Wizards, obviously, now. Can they move up to second in the East? Yes or no?
I think they can. Looking at what they're doing right now, they're on a 5-game winning streak. The Lakers are sisters of the poor right now. Potentially could be a 6-game winning streak. They got the Lakers up next tomorrow. The game the Rays referring to that we will be covering. They're moving up, and which team? I pose a question: which team do you look at other than the Cleveland Cavaliers can knock them off from being that 2-seed?
Okay, well here's the thing: they're tied with Atlanta. Record-wise.
On a loss column.
No,
right?
they're both 28-20.
Okay.
But the Wizards have the head-to-head matchup, which is why they're ahead of them in the standings. Okay. Then you got Toronto, who is just a game and a half ahead of you. And you got Boston, who is 2.5 ahead of you. And we saw what happened when they played Boston last. So, with these teams that are close to them, my question is are the Wizards better than the Celtics, the Raptors, and the Hawks?
I think they're better than
all three.
All three. I'm not.
If that's the case, then they can easily get the number. They should be the number 2 seed.
Uh-huh. I don't think. When I think of Toronto, I still think of the team in the postseason that the Wizards beat, and even through some of the stuff that we saw last season with the Kyle Lowry and how he didn't show up in big games. So when I look at Toronto, I don't look at them as a team that the Wizards should be scared of, especially the way they're playing basketball right now. I just feel like last night you saw, like for instance, they beat the New York Knicks last night 117-101, and you saw Markieff Morris step up. I believe he had like 24 points, 15 boards in that game. Then Bradley Beal had 28 points. Like within that starting unit, they have nothing but ballers. There's no break. There's no break out there when you're playing the Washington Wizards. In that starting unit, in terms of people who can put the ball in the basket. Defensively, they're not the best team in the world right now, but I think offensively, they're one of the powerhouses in the NBA. And when you look at these other teams in the Eastern Conference, like you mentioned, the Toronto Raptors, DeRozan and Lowry.
DeRozan's top five
scoring. No, I'm saying DeRozan and Lowry. That's just two, right? When you look at Toronto's roster, you go to Atlanta, you got Millsap, Dwight Howard, what's the point guard's name? Dennis Schroeder. Yeah. So, again, that's not a team that scares me offensively. Then you go to the Boston Celtics. The team we saw.
Isaiah Thomas,
obviously. Who's a dog. I'm not taking anything away from
Horford.
But in terms of getting consistent buckets, though. I'm talking about consistent buckets.
Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas. That's
Isaiah Thomas, those two.
But you look at I think Marcus Smart is improving as a scorer and as a facilitator, to be honest. He is a point guard.
Yeah, and they're well coached. And I'm not taking anything away from them. They are well coached.
And Jay Crowder is, as we saw, he can shoot the ball.
But when you look at that Wizards starting unit, you know, with Gortat, who averages a double-double, John Wall.
Gortat doesn't scare anyone.
I know, but I'm just telling you what I mean in terms of stats,
how they play.
Yeah, as a unit. John Wall, as to me, the best point guard in the Eastern Conference in terms of true point guard setting everybody up. He's the premier point guard in the Eastern Conference. You have Bradley Beal, who's improving as a scorer. Otto Porter is about 14, 15 points a game.
He's a difference maker.
I agree with you.
He's a difference maker.
So to your point, everybody talks about how this team missed Trevor Ariza, what he brought to the table. A guy who can defend and hit the three. Otto Porter is top, I believe it, leads the league in three-point percentage right now.
Yes.
Then you have, he defends his position. He plays good defense. He does all the right play. He does all the right plays for winning basketball. He has now become that Trevor Ariza. Everybody said, wow, the Wizards need to replace Trevor Ariza. He's been that guy and some.
The Wizards, as far as their top two players, Bradley Beal and John Wall, how do they stack up against the rest of the league? We had this question on our post-game show. Uh-huh. DeMar DeRozan averages 27.8 points per game. Uh-huh. That's fifth in the league. Uh-huh. Then you have Kyle Lowry, 17th, 23.1 points a game. John Wall and Bradley Beal are beneath them when it comes to scoring. Points per game, John Wall's 21st at 22.7, and Bradley Beal's 23rd. So if you match up the stars on the team, Toronto probably stacks up the best. And Toronto has had success against the Wizards in the regular season.
Yeah.
But when you look at coaching and when you look at the whole team, I think the Celtics are probably the most challenging matchup for them. And it's going to be a dogfight. And then you bring in the off-the-court stuff and mm-hmm. what has been said lately. That's who you probably are going to have to defeat in order to become or jump in the standings in order to be that number two seed. So can they do that? They go to Boston one more time. Mm-hmm. The worst they could do is split. But can they outperform the Celtics just in general? Not necessarily head-to-head for the remainder of the season. That's what we want to see. The Celtics, in my opinion, are just as well coached, if not, you know, maybe have a bit of an edge with their coach. We love Brad Stevens. Uh-huh. I'm not sure if the Wizards can sustain their success with John Wall, you know, being so heavily dependent on. That's the problem. And you have Bill, who's often injured. Versus, I think, even though you have Avery Bradley out for a period of time, the Celtics are probably one of those teams that throughout the season, they're more durable, they're tough, and they could probably get that number two seed over Washington for the long haul because you're going to have to rest John Wall at some point.
You're listening to Urban Sports, saying my boy Ray G's and myself, Wally. The question is, do you see the Wizards finishing the season as the second seed in the Eastern Conference? Call in. The number is 240-478-3140. Tweet us at Urban Sports, saying the question is also on our Urban Sports scene Facebook page. To your question, to your response, I just think this Wizards team as a whole is better than offensively better than the Boston Celtics, offensively better than the Atlanta Hawks, offensively better than the Toronto Raptors as a whole.
What wins
within
games?
The starters? Defense, but these teams don't. None of these teams.
Boston is
actually Boston good is physical. They're physical, but they have like they said when we were down there in the post game. They haven't played solid defense in the stretch. They have been a good defensive team in the stretch. Now that could be because Bradley isn't there. He's been hurt. But at the same time, they haven't been a solid defensive team. It's not like they've been trying to think of one like the Memphis Grizzlies or something like that. This Wizards team defensively has been okay. Hasn't been terrible. During the stretch, their defense has been solid. They've scored this whole season. I mean, throughout the season, they've been a good scoring team. I think they're starting five. And you got Kelly Oubre off the bench, who's been a very good defender, usually when he comes in the game, he's checking your best player on the floor. And we saw him check Isaiah Thomas well at the Verizon not too long ago. So this team, this Wizard team, is just is just playing great basketball from the starters. And to be honest with you, even the bench is playing okay. You got guys like Jason Smith who's playing decent basketball.
I totally agree. And you're averaging 106 points a game, and you're playing defense. You have four legitimate three-point threats with Markieff Morris. I think he's a legitimate
threat, by the way.
That's a tough team to overcome. However, when you get past the starting five is where you start to get concerned. And I think that's where Boston's a little bit deeper. And, again, I'm thinking that the Wizards are going to want to rest John Wall and Bradley Beal going down the stretch, especially if they continue to win. They have a favorable schedule coming up. The Lakers, they should win. New Orleans, they should win,
yes,
which will place them 9 games over 500. And I think once you start to build more and more wins and you're several games above 500, that's where you start to look at resting guys like John Wall, resting your star players, and then can you sustain that success? Whereas Boston's, Boston's going to continue to go hard because they need to win games, and guys like Isaiah Thomas, they play so hard that they're going to be there at the end of most games, which is why it's so impressive the Wizards blowing them out recently, because they play to the final buzzer all the time. We always allude to the fact that they never give up, and they're scrappy. And this is, again, I'm focusing on the Celtics because I feel like this is who the Wizards are going to have to battle to get that number two seed. If they do not get the number two seed, where do they fall? The question. Are they going to be top three, top four? I believe so.
Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting season. We have a long season. We're going to see all of it play out. Anyway, would you trade Kirk Cousins for a top five pick? We'll discuss that after the break. It's the Urban Sports saying, "Fi Aegis, ya dig, deuces."
Looking for sports here in the Tri-City area like you haven't heard before? Check me, yours truly, Mike Knox and the Solon Sports, weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. right here on Fox Sports Radio, 1340 a.m. Hopewell.
I seen your girl post a BM, so I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, that's your man, I hate to be him.
I'm Rashad Ross, I listen to Urban Sports Scene.
Alright, you listen to Urban Sports Scene, myself, Wally, my boy Ray Jeezy in the building. Question, we posed it right before the break. Would you trade Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins for a top five pick, period?
You got to answer this first, since you're the Redskins fan.
I should answer it? I'll put it this way. In 2000, the Redskins made a – well, let's even backtrack it. In, like, 1999, the Redskins made a trade that helped them out. I think believe that Ricky Williams got traded to the from the draft. New Orleans moved and got Ricky Williams. The Redskins got their pick and was the second pick overall. Then they traded – I forgot which team. I'm gonna look it up. Matter of fact, let me look it up. In the 2000 draft, they traded up. They're a couple picks to get Chris Samuels, and I'm gonna look that up anyway. So in that draft, they got Chris Samuels and LeVar Arrington in that draft in 2000. And I hear the notion that, you know, Kirk Cousins, you wouldn't trade your first pick overall. I mean, you wouldn't trade Kirk Cousins for a top five pick. I think that's stupid because at the same time, we talked about the Redskins giving up multiple first round picks to get RG3, right?
Yeah.
And everybody says, why would they do that? That's terrible. Why do you do that? On the flip side, if an organization offers, because Kirk Cousins gets franchised and he gets these, what's it called when you get franchised but you're able to still sign with another team? It's not the
unrestricted free agent.
It's not restricted. It's a term for it. I'm sorry, I don't have it with me. But if the Redskins decide to do that, put that franchise on Kirk Cousins, they'll be able to get a first round pick this year and a first round pick next year. So my thing is, if that's an option, and say the 49ers, who will probably have Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan wants Kirk Cousins, I'm jumping at that deal.
Yo, if you get a top five pick, right, you're going to go pass rush, right? More than likely.
Yeah.
You got two defensive linemen that are projected to be in, around the top.
Yeah, we have a call up with the Urban Sports thing. Hello.
Yep.
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
Oh, it's, oh, so CC. CC's early. Okay, CC's early. Hey, CC, how you doing? We're going to have you on shortly, okay?
Okay.
All right. See, anything can happen on Urban Sports Saint.
Anything can happen on live radio.
I know,
it's
right?
Cool.
It's cool. It's
but
cool.
You have two defensive linemen projected to be in the top seven picks at this point, top five picks. Myles Garrett, who's probably going to go first or second, the defensive end from Texas A&M, right?
Yeah.
And then you got Jonathan Allen. Because
who's a beast.
Jonathan Allen is the guy that the Redskins should to jump ahead to get. And then you'll still have your pick, the Redskins, at 17, right?
I want Adams from LSU. That's what I want, the safety.
But at 17, can you then go get your quarterback who could be Deshaun Watson?
I wouldn't even get a quarterback. I would still stay defense. I'd get, you know, I would.
T.J. Watt?
I'd get Peppers from Michigan. I would get whoever. I'll get the best available defensive player.
The boy from Temple is nice, too.
Yeah, I would get the best. My thing.
Reddick. Other than that, I don't know why you – if you're not going to use the picks wisely, then don't make the trade. But Scott McLuhan, it sounds like – and Bruce Allen, they sound committed to Kirk Cousins. So this is an odd scenario. But you're going from a standpoint – you're coming from a standpoint if the offer is made, which it – could well be based on Kyle Shanahan going to the 49ers, all the rumors that are swirling around that organization. I just don't see it happening. You would be an idiot to offer that for Kirk Cousins, and the Redskins would be stupid for not taking the deal. So take the deal. Yes, that's my answer. Take the deal.
No, I'm just saying, in my opinion, I just feel like it's you have to take that deal. We're talking about first-round picks. How valuable is a first-round pick? I don't care what you tell me. It's a first-round pick. It shouldn't be that hard.
A defensive, I would take a defensive player and an offensive player. You're saying take two defensive players.
I would take, the defense is so bad, I'd take two defensive players.
Okay,
and
so.
And this is a heavy defensive draft. I would take the kid, like we're talking top five, I'd take the kid from Bama. I would take
Jonathan
Foster
Allen?
From Bama.
I'll take Foster.
I think he's automatic. I think Foster's automatic stud. Inside backer, middle linebacker, he's a stud. He would be my, if I can't get Adams, if I feel like, I don't need to get Adams. I'm getting Foster, and if I'm cool with it, I'll get Peppers and move him to safety. Then I feel like I've been tackled. I didn't hit two birds with one stone.
Now in the NFL, is Foster going to be an inside linebacker?
An inside linebacker.
Okay, what about T.J. Watt later?
T.J. Watt is not even. He's more of a project. I mean, I've seen T.J. Watt. I think the name Watt is the reason why people are infatuated.
Right. And he can leap just like J.J.
He's not J.J. Watt. He's
have you
improved.
Seen him rush the passer?
I have. I've watched.
And he's good,
Watt.
Right?
He's improved. T.J. Watt is not. It's not like he's Garrett from Texas A&M. That's like the next big thing. That's the next Von Miller. It's not like he's that dude. Because the last name is Watt. I feel you. It's
well,
Watt.
I'm saying you can get him later after you already addressed
I'm
a defensive
Peppers
need.
Over him. Peppers is more impact.
This
player.
Is all hypothetical, by the way.
It is
this
very
is
hypothetical.
If Kirk Cousins
if he gets traded,
and that is highly unlikely for this amount of. Valuable draft picks.
It's
two number
Kyle
one.
Shanahan,
come on, man.
Kyle Shanahan.
Come on, bro.
Kyle Shanahan loves him. That's the word. The word is Kyle Shanahan loves
him.
Yeah,
but not for two number one picks.
Look, dude, I agree, but that's the word. That's the rumor going on that Kyle Shanahan loves him. All but anyway, man, it's about time for a commercial break. When we get back from commercial break, we'll be talking about Serena Williams winning the Australia Open. We'll have CC Talents from gladiators.com to discuss that after the break. CC's already on, as you heard her, anyway. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Boy, did you hear what I say?
Yo, Big Slim.
What's up, champ?
Let the kid in, man.
Go on inside.
Excuse me.
What's your name, man? What's your name?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, champ.
All right.
A mountain. am a tall tree. Oh, I am a swift wind sweeping the country. I am a river down in the valley. Oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest.
The early and punctual CeCe Towns is joining us now from GladiatorHers.com to talk Serena Williams. Is she the GOAT? I don't think it's a debate, but we always love having CeCe on the show. Her perspective and her advocacy for women's sports is just awesome. So, CeCe, what's happening?
How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're swell. Peachy.
Great. Happy New Year. I think it's your first time being on this year so far.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Yeah. So, Happy New Year.
Absolutely. So let's get right to it. Well, actually, you know what? We want to first, before we get started, give you a chance to kind of share your website and what it's all about. GladiatorHers. I've checked out a recent blog and didn't realize how our federal government can affect women's sports. But thanks for the insight on that. But yeah, share with our listeners how they can read your content.
Yeah, everything is GladiatorHers. So GladiatorHers.com. is the blog. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter at GladiatorHers, and we're always talking about women in sports, always trying to, like you said, let people know that you know, sort of popular events, political events, can also have an impact on women's sports.
So CeCe, obviously, you know, we're all boosted. Serena Williams won the Australia Open.
Boosted.
But no, I actually rooted for
Venus. It's a DC word.
It is, though.
Sorry.
I know. I'm going to use boosted. I was rooting for Venus. Am I wrong for that? Because I was rooting for Venus.
No, I feel like anybody who won, that would have been a win for us all. I feel like Venus, you know, was the underdog for sure. And I think Serena would have respected you pulling for her sister.
Thank you.
Serena,
I apologize for rooting for Venus. But
can I ask a personal question real quick, CeCe? Do you have any siblings?
I have two younger siblings, brothers, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't make the comparison. I was going to say, if you're battling a sibling, what would you do?
Okay, wait. So you can't necessarily make the comparison, but my brothers and I all played tennis. We all used to compete against each other. So I get it. I mean, we obviously never competed at the level they're competing, but the whole sibling rivalry, like I know. Sibling rivalry, I know.
I'm just asking because I don't know how I feel if I had to watch my sibling, like,
own the world,
beat me and be the greatest ever. It would be hard for me to sit there and watch that. I'm not going to lie.
Especially when she was like she was like the best. Venus was like the best at the time.
The better one.
But do you guys have brothers and sisters?
Oh,
yes.
I do, definitely.
Okay. So I feel like if you really put yourself in that position, you would realize one or two things. One, growing up, Venus knew that Serena was better than her. I think the whole household knew that. Mm. And so I think, to see the way she progressed, I don't think it was a surprise to Venus at all. Mm. And two, although I think, you know, she's a competitor, I think there's a way to still be happy for your sibling. And I think it's pretty amazing the way they've been able to coexist. Like, I don't think either one of them ever felt the need to not work as hard, you know, because they wanted their sister to do well. I think it is pretty amazing what they've been able to do, but I think you would be happy for your sibling.
But don't you think a little bit, like, especially the Australia Open, knowing that Venus she got to the finals and she looked like she was playing at a high level, don't you think she was pissed off just a little bit to lose her little sister?
I think she's definitely hurt, right? Because anybody playing at that level is absolutely 100% a competitor, and every time they step on the court, they want to win. So I think there is it's probably maybe even still in pain and sad about the fact that she didn't win. But I mean, they say it all the time, like, who better to lose to than my sister, you know?
anybody else in Venus probably would have won. We will all agree on that. Now, I want to ask you this. A, what is Serena's legacy in your opinion, your words? And B, how does her setting this record, surpassing Steffi Graf, in defeating her sister, how does that family dynamic also factor into the legacy that is now, you know, Serena being the best player ever?
Well, for me, in my mind, I mean, she's, yeah, the greatest of all time.
Uh-huh.
No question, men or women. So for me, that's how I view her. And I view her as the greatest of all time, not just because of the fact that she has more, she's, you know, won more majors than anybody else, but just the way she's done it, right? Like, I mean, she's one of the most hated athletes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
She has had to deal with so much, and she always carries it with grace, and has just been the consummate competitor through it all. And she's really just sort of revolutionized the way women play tennis. I mean, the way people in general play tennis. I mean, the women's game before she came, it didn't look the same. You know, people weren't lifting weights. Women weren't, you know, weren't training the same way as, you know, after she came. And just, I mean, she just took the sport by storm and, you know, made it cool for black girls to play tennis. And so I just, yeah, she's the greatest of all time, a number of reasons in my mind.
I had this question. You saying she's the GOAT in female? I mean, GOAT in tennis, and I agree. Actually, how would you rank her within U.S. as a U.S. within the as a U.S. athlete? Is she like the best U.S. athlete ever?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably give her that too. I mean, I think, you know, I always look at. I mean, obviously, you know, you look at like people like Michael Jordan,
Michael Phelps,
you know,
Michael Phelps.
You know,
uh-huh.
Michael, but well, I was going to say what about Jordan was that, you know, he played a team sport, and that doesn't take away from anything that he did. But when I always think of the GOAT, I think of like more individual athletes, because shouldering the burden by yourself is, to me, just on a whole nother level. And so, you know, you think of like the Ali, you think of Ali, you think of Michael Phelps. You think it's Serena. Like, there's not many. First, there's not even many people that you can put in the same conversation as her.
Uh-huh.
But I think, you know, when you consider her longevity, you consider, in addition to her longevity, that the way she dominated or has been dominating over such a large period of time, the fact that she had no real rivals. You know, they've been trying to make, you know, Sharapova,
Hingis,
and they tried to make. Crisis, like all these people, her rivals. When you stack them up, like she had no rivals. It was like Serena. And so, I mean, for that, I probably think she is probably the greatest American athlete of all time. I mean, just that. I mean, that's my opinion. Obviously, not everybody's going to agree, but I mean, I don't think there's many people that you can really compare her to.
Yo, and she's dominating at 35. Wally and I are both 35, and we can feel it.
Yo,
yeah,
like,
yeah, I'm 35, and my body's about done.
Listen, I was like, Lord, I'll make it through this workout. It's amazing. And, you know, people, you know, there's always, one of the things that's just amazing about her is that there's always whispers of something, right? So now everybody's like, well, when is she going to retire? You know, she's gotten engaged, and, you know, we think she's slowed down. And it's like, just when y'all think, like, just she has to silence her haters.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing. Like, she's always doing it her way, you know? I'm going to get married when I want. I'm going to settle down when I want. I'm going to retire when I want. I'm going to come out here and be the greatest, like, for as long as I want to. So, yeah, I'll just sit back and sort of enjoy the ride.
From Compton. Yeah. Straight out of Compton. All the odds stacked against her. I mean, it's amazing what she's achieved. You making me like Serena Williams more than I already like her,
yeah.
Which is amazing.
Man, she plays tennis, man. Tennis hurts.
I like your candidness too about how you couldn't get through a workout. I'm there too. I used to never like cut my workout short either. Now I cut them short, which is depressing.
It is. I will come up with any excuse these days to cut that down. It's a little cold in here. I think I did enough for the day. Like, what? You're sweating profusely. It's not cold in here.
No. That's right. Awesome, man. We always appreciate your point of view, your perspective, and, of course, again, your advocacy.
Yeah, we definitely do. So, Cece, can you tell people how to reach you and whatnot on Twitter and even your blog site?
Yeah, so again, the blog is gladiatorhers.com. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at the Sporty Esquire. Sporty Esquire, all one word, because I do sports and the law at the same damn time. So check me out there. I have been writing for ESPNW lately and writing on gladiatorhers.com. So I'm always trying to keep the content new and fresh.
Again, this is the lovely CC Towns. Appreciate you as always.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Stay blessed.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, man, it's always a blessing to have CC. She's awesome.
Absolutely.
She's awesome. Real talk. Real. Right, what do you always say?
Real people do real things.
You know, anyway, it's about time to get to a real beef. Charles Barkley, LeBron James. It's going down. We'll talk about that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Safe for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
No man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all.
The Commission, Uncle Paulie, P. Diddy, Cesar Leo, De Janeiro.
Yeah. So as you know.
Do you know what beef is?
Do you know?
We went from Common, Glory, and MLK and Selma to beef.
Beef.
To Biggie Smalls.
Exactly.
Well, two slain black people in Black History Month.
Biggie Smalls. Even though, so Charles Barkley Biggie. Charles Barkley is Biggie.
Even though some comedian, Chris Rock, said, Biggie wasn't assassinated. He just got shot.
I know,
he
right.
Was just a, he wasn't a, yeah, he wasn't a political figure. Got to clean this up real quick.
Anyway, as you all know, LeBron James and Charles Barkley are beefing. If you haven't heard, this is what Barkley had to say on TNT during the week about LeBron James. Was it last week?
Yeah.
Last week about LeBron James saying that he needs more. He needs another playmaker on his squad. So listen, Charles Barkley from TNT. Well, say pretty much call out LeBron James.
Same kind of question I asked KG. LeBron James' comments were blank.
Inappropriate. Whiny, all the above. The Cleveland Cavaliers, they have given him everything he wanted. They have the highest payroll in NBA history. They bought, he wanted J.R. Smith last summer. They paid him. He wanted Shumpert last summer. They bought in Kyle Korver. He's the best player in the world. Does he want all the good players? He don't want to compete. He is an amazing player. But this notion, they're the defending champs. And for him to be trying to hold anything over Dan Gilbert's head, and I love all these wild punk-ass reporters on television who's afraid to call LeBron. LeBron's a great player and a great guy. But this notion that he's got to have all the best players on his team. He's got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. He wants everybody. He don't want to compete. He want to be the favorite all the time. It just pisses me off that a guy that great don't want to compete.
So candid. So true and
now,
so real.
And then you had LeBron call Charles Barkley a hater and brings up so many dirty things about his past. He brings up
spitting on a kid,
personal debt,
gambling.
I'm not a role model. Gambling. What do you say? Throwing the dude through the window. It's amazing where this thing has gone to.
I think LeBron has a lot of built up frustration just in general, not just Barkley, but Barkley obviously is his target because of what was said. But Barkley was well within his right to criticize LeBron's choice. And LeBron, I think, is also upset because he knew Barkley was right. You know, that's sometimes when you're really in your feelings. When somebody says something you know they're right and it hurts because it's true. Why complain? Why complain now at this point?
Yeah.
You've accomplished what you set out to do in Cleveland. I understand you want to be considered the best ever, but the best ever, a la Magic, Michael, you don't remember hearing them ask for better talent, more players. They work with what they had. I don't know if Jordan would have wanted to play with Ron Harper, but he played with him. I don't know if Magic would have wanted to have Byron Scott his whole career, but he played with him.
James Worthy
was a talent.
Yeah,
so Byron Scott was good too. Don't get me wrong. But was there better players out there? Yeah. Probably.
Uh-huh.
So I think it hurt because he knew Charles right, and it was just built up because Charles Barkley is someone who criticized him. But you got guys like Skip Bayless who says worse about you. Uh-huh. You know, so why go out to Sir Charles? But I like Barkley's comeback after LeBron did his rant or came out with his rant and said, "We'll never be friends," which is real. That's what's up.
Yeah.
And LeBron is a guy, I think, that wants to be liked. And so this is uncharted territories for him as far as just a personal beef and battle with an NBA analyst / former NBA player.
You listen to Urban Sports, saying myself, Wally, my boy Ray Jeezy. Quote from LeBron, "I'm not going to let him disrespect my legacy like that." Obviously,
I like him being real, though.
Obviously, you know, it hit him because he knows that this is what Barkley said tarnishes the LeBron legacy, because LeBron looks like a guy that, according to Barkley, looks like a guy that's all he cares about. He needs to play with the best players to put himself on elite status so he can get all the rings, so you can say, you know what, I'm better than Michael Jordan, I'm better than Magic Johnson, I'm better than Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I'm at that level. I'm on that Mount Rushmore because I have more championships. And Barkley did strike a chord. My issue with it isn't, to me, what Barkley said was right. My issue with LeBron, if LeBron was going to keep it basketball, mentioning Barkley has no rings, I'm cool with that. But the problem I have with LeBron is he went personal. Because truth be told, Barkley can go that route and say some personal stuff to LeBron James that hurts the ego, right? That hurts LeBron James personally. Keep it basketball. Don't make it personal. Keep it basketball. That's my issue with LeBron James. I think that if somebody is going at you like Barkley has gone on LeBron for a number of times with the big three, not performing in the finals, like Barkley has gone after LeBron, and not in a personal way, but on a basketball level, because that's his job. His job is to critique basketball players and what they do. And Barkley has gone on record as saying certain things about LeBron James, and that's cool to address. If you feel mad personally, it's cool to address on a basketball level. You could say, "Well, Chuck, how many NBA finals did you get to? What did you know? How many MVPs?
Just compare your career.
Yeah, career. How many MVPs did you get?
You know, when you're mad, sometimes you don't think rationally, and this is how he felt at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is how he wanted to respond. We've all done that before, where we say some things out of anger, and we probably take some low blows. LeBron is a very unique talent. There's been no player ever like him with the athleticism, with the ball handling skills that he has. I don't think anything that Barkley says is going to necessarily tarnish his legacy. However, what he did was unprecedented.
Uh-huh.
You do not remember top tier players in the past, star players, you know, leaving their franchise, what had become their franchise, to play with other stars in order to win.
Yeah.
Now, this is a different era. You know, if Kobe was not talked out of it by, I believe it was Mitch Kupchak or Dr. Buss is Magic causing.
Shut up.
I believe Kobe would have done the same thing. Kobe would have been in a Chicago uniform.
Yes.
And the sad thing is.
Oh, Clippers too.
The sad thing is both of these guys, Kobe and LeBron, are chasing Jordan. And that's the problem. Why Kobe, do you want to go to Chicago? why, LeBron, are you trying to desperately win more and more titles? Because you're chasing, as he said, that ghost. My advice is to continue to cement your legacy. If there's people out there that are going to criticize you, that's always going to be the case. And yes, there are going to be some that's going to put an asterisk by LeBron's career and championships because he went and played with another star in Dwayne Wade and another top-tier player in Chris Bosh just to learn how to win a championship. But there was nothing wrong with that because LeBron James is also unique in the fact that nobody had as much pressure coming into the league as him.
And definitely. And he helped get Cleveland their first championship.
So who wins this beef? I'm going to say LeBron because LeBron achieved much more than Sir Charles in his career.
Yeah.
Both had to lift cities up that weren't winners. And you see what happened with Sir Charles in Philly.
I think LeBron's wrong in this situation within the beast. He's wrong.
He's Charles wrong, but, right. But he's winning.
I don't know he's winning.
He's winning.
Wrong. I don't know he's winning. But anyway, it's about time to wrap this show up, man. It's been a pleasure.
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
This ain't a dunk. This ain't a dunk, dude. This is not a dunk.
What it is.
Anyway, man, we appreciate you all for listening to the show. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, Ray's Atlanta Falcons wins the Super Bowl. Ray could be even more happier for the next show.
Yes. Yes. Easy face.
Easy face, yes. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig deuces. A Mega, lead us out, big homie. To the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag.